If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
People are too easy to go out of the internet, check a couple of sites, and essentially every site is telling you what they want you to hear because custodians are selling essentially their product. What they need is your money in their account. That's their product.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Bernard empowers investors to own their finances and break the cycle of dependency on a self-serving financial industry. Bernard is the founder of 401kcheckbook.com, which gives investors direct control of their tax-sheltered funds for real estate equity and debt opportunities using checkbook control IRAs, QRPs, solo 401ks, and checkbook life insurance. He is also the founder of agentfinancial.com, which provides tax, entity, and financial services to real estate professionals, including 1031 and 453 advisory services for real estate agents, real estate investors, and mortgage brokers. Hey, Bernard, welcome to the show.
Sam, honored to be here. Been looking forward to this. A couple of minutes of chit-chat that we had leading up to this point is great. We have lots to cover and looking forward to diving in.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. If you can give our listeners just a, you know, brief 30-second, 1-minute overview maybe of who you are and what you do.
CPA, life insurance licensed, securities licensed. What it is about is giving people honest, objective, comprehensive, and integrated info about financial and tax.
Yeah, that's a high bar. Comprehensive. So what does that mean? Who's a customer that comes to you and what do you do for them?
What we do is give people objective information. The financial industry is fragmented. So it's dominated by folks that have a one-dimensional focus. And they're a life insurance guy, it's going to be all about your infinite banking. If they're a financial advisor, stockbroker, it's going to be all about buying this stock or that investment. If they're an annuities guy, it's going to be annuities. Whatever anybody's angle is, that's what they're going to be promoting. What's missing is somebody that actually knows everything about all these spaces and will give you objective information. And that's what we're about.
Right. So typically, you know, and what I hear you not saying, but what I hear you saying is that each of these respective professionals, they're compensated based upon the one thing they can sell. And so you take a more holistic approach to this, but how are you then differentiating yourself on that front? Like, how can you take a holistic approach without saying, okay, we're just getting paid for all the same services, but we just all do it under one roof?
Absolutely. And so I'll use one microcosm to illustrate. So say the self-directed accounts that we were talking about. So checkbook control, IRAs, 401ks, QRP, all that stuff. The way we work is fundamentally different. We set ourselves up so that we can deliver any of these services. We primarily act as a guide. So if you get out there on the internet, you're going to find some folks promoting solo 401k. You're going to find some other folks promoting QRP. Some other folks saying, do a checkbook control IRA with a trust. Others say, do checkbook control with an LLC. Others will say, never do checkbook control. What we do is we're experts in this space. We can deliver all of those. And we act as a guide and we'll help everybody identify what's the best thing based on their profile. So if somebody takes a look at our website, you're not going to see, hey, get this or get that. What you're going to see is, hey, we'll be your guide and we're indifferent to what you choose because we can assist you with all of them. So we took away those conflicts of interest by design because as we were talking about, we're all human. And there's no escaping that. And if we have a conflict of interest and the only way we get compensated is based on one specific route, There's no way we can transcend that. And there's no pretending, there's no use pretending that we can. So you have to set things up in a way that you remove those conflicts of interest. I think anybody that says, sure, I have a conflict of interest, or I only get compensated if I sell you X, but I'm going to be I'm an angel. I'm going to tell you the full truth and nothing but the truth, even though it may go against me. That I don't think that that's realistic. And if people see me, people may know me, that I may knock a bit the financial industry. And I don't knock the individuals, because I think every individual starts off well-meaning, well-intentioned. But the way the system works, it kind of takes advantage of the human weaknesses in human nature and exploits those conflicts. And so we've removed them.
Right. So do you guys handle all of your different services in-house, or do you have industry partners then that come in and assist you in all of these different?
So there's only one thing that we have to kind of go outside of our organization.
Okay.
And there's the reason has to be that way is for regulatory reasons. So for one of the things we assist people with, we'll assist people with their IRAs. And as opposed to 401ks and qualified plans that don't need a custodian, IRAs require a custodian.
Right.
Now, whether somebody's going to have their account controlled by a custodian, or we're going to marginalize that custodian by delivering checkbook control, there's got to be a custodian in there. So if we were to form our own custodian, our hands would be tied with regard to giving guidance the way we do. The way the tax code is set up, the way the state banking authorities work, custodians kind of have to have their be completely passive. And what we're able to do with people, obviously, is we have partner relationships. We know everybody in the industry.
Sure.
So whether it's a pricing advantage, a service advantage, coming through us, even if there's going to be a custodian involved, gives people huge advantages. And we feel that it's easy for us to, so to speak, outsource that function, because ironically, in our opinion, the best custodians are the ones that actually stay true to what a custodian is supposed to be and don't venture beyond what that is. So custodians, as we mentioned, they're not supposed to be giving any guidance, but there are some custodians that say, hey, we're giving guidance without giving guidance. And in our experience, that leads to all sorts of mistakes, because they're not set up to give guidance. And while they may have some folks on staff that are really knowledgeable, it's at best hit or miss if the person that you're speaking to when you call in actually knows what they're talking about. So when they overstep the bounds of just being a custodian, we've seen lots of mistakes happen because they'll try to give information and try to give advice without giving advice. And sometimes it's the wrong information.
Right, right. That's interesting. So for you guys, everything except for the custodian is then in-house.
Exactly.
Got it. Got it. Now, I want to hear some differentiation here, because I've not heard this before. You said that 401ks, you named a couple of different investment like styles that don't need, or types of investments that don't need custodians. I've not heard that. So can you break that down for us?
Gladly. So these accounts are not really investments. They're creations, creatures of tax code, right? It's like a total abstraction. What is an IRA? So an IRA is something that meets the requirements of Section 408 of the tax code. And what is a qualified retirement plan? Something that meets the requirements of 401 of the tax code, right? Now, obviously, there's reams and reams of other sections of code and labor law and Department of Labor rulings and revenue rulings. It's just a monstrosity, right? But at its core, these are created by tax codes, and you just have to meet the definition of that. So you want the tax advantages, you've got to follow what the tax code says. Now, in 408 of the tax code, which is about IRAs, it says that an IRA has got to have a custodian that is a bank. Now, a bank can mean a certain financial institution or certain financial institutions that are approved by the IRS, but you've got to have some sort of financial institution there. Qualified retirement plans, and we'll just say QRP for short, just like nobody says individual retirement arrangement, we just say IRA.
Sure.
So do not have to have a financial institution custodian. Now, you may sometimes have that, but it's not required. And sometimes the financial institutions want you to think that. So they don't point out this distinction, but that's the case. So qualified retirement plans don't need a custodian involved. And if you look at the fine print, if you have some sort of 401k with a custodian, they probably define themselves as custodian, or maybe even say they're not a custodian. They may just say we're a record keeper, which is essentially a totally nebulous role. Like, almost, you know, it's not a recognized role in the tax code. So when you work with QRPs, you can go direct to control of your assets and totally skip the custodian. It's when you have an IRA that we have to figure out, okay, you want control, we can use an LLC, we can use a trust to marginalize the custodian, but that custodian's got to be there and we need some fancy footwork to bypass them.
Right. Now that's interesting. So you could, I've never heard this. So there's technically a way that you could then self-manage your own 401k and your own QRP with no outside assistance.
Yes. Now, that should come with a lot of caveats.
Right. I would think so.
Because the QRP is something that there's a lot of misinformation about and a lot of misunderstanding about. So when we enter the world of qualified retirement plans, there's a lot more complexity than there is to IRAs.
Mm.
Now, how do I say this? I'm thinking a good way to present this. So an IRA, from a regulatory perspective, is really straightforward. There are not a lot of bells and whistles. It's pretty straightforward. Obviously, you got to know prohibited transactions. You've got to know UBIT. There are things you got to know. And if you're going to have checkbook control, you've got to understand everything about LLCs, where to set it up, how to set it up, what's the best way, different structures. But at the IRA level, there's not so much flexibility in the tax code.
Right.
Once you enter QRPs, there's an incredible amount of complexity. And assuming somebody is just a solo plan, a true solo plan, a lot of that complexity does not apply. It's still there. And you need to work with a provider that is able to support that and is not going to make it sound like, hey, here's this piece of paper and you're good to go. But especially if somebody has any employees, and any employees, maybe they even have their spouse has a business, or they've got multiple businesses. And if there are employees in any of those businesses, now it gets to be super complex, potentially. So you can have direct control of the money, but if you're not working with a service provider that can support the compliance aspect of this, you may be better off without a QRP. And what we're seeing out there is people saying, hey, oh, QRP is this amazing thing. You don't need a custodian, get direct control. And they're not informing people that, hey, it's not just about the piece of paper. There's a lot more complexity here that we're not telling you about. And if you violate those rules, you'd be better off without the QRP. So in short, QRP can be great, but it's not for everybody. And it's only really great if you're being given all the information and not just hearing the good side.
So it sounds like you would not necessarily recommend someone just go out and do this on their own without a custodian involved.
So it's not the custodian role, because the custodian role is almost nebulous. It's about understanding the broader compliance. The custodian's role is just a custodian just holds assets.
Right.
Now, if you don't need a custodian to hold assets, and that's all that they're doing, right? So QRP doesn't need anybody to hold the assets. You don't need a custodian. Now, what you do need is somebody to help you navigate the compliance of actually managing a plan. So what are the tax code requirements for managing this? What are the potential ERISA and labor law compliance implications? And that doesn't come from a custodian anyway. So it's not really the custodian that's important. It's the compliance support that's important.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, that's something that we don't hear anything about.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it. I've interviewed and talked to and have worked with enough custodians across both my investors, my own investments, my family's investments, and no one's ever said, "Hey, you know, maybe you should talk to somebody about compliance." I've heard them say plenty of times like, "Hey, you know, we're not responsible," but no one's ever come to us and said, "Here's a third party that you could call and make sure that you're not about," because like you said, I think you touched on this earlier. You said basically the fines and penalties are you know, not commensurate to maybe the crime, quote unquote, crime that was committed, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, well, you're going to lose half your retirement account because you didn't follow this one little checkbox. Like, wait, this is crazy. So is that compliance? How does someone go about making sure they're compliant? Let's go there.
Yeah. And it comes back to really the same theme. Custodians and sellers of plans are in the business of selling the paperwork. That's what it's about. And it's not even reasonable to say, hey, these guys should dangle all the compliance risks in front of you. They'll never sell a plan.
Sure.
Right. And also operationally, depending who you're working with, right, the fee structures in these places are, it's all over the board.
All over.
Some of them offer competitive pricing. There's not enough meat on that bone for them to actually give you meaningful support.
Right, sure.
So if somebody says, hey, I just want to control, or I want to invest in real estate or crypto or something, they're like, here's a piece of paper, you can do it. They're not going to tell you, hey, take 10 steps back. Think long and hard. They're just going to sell you the document. And in the fine print, it's going to say, joke's on you.
Right. That's interesting. There's something I want to circle back on. And we're going to take a little bit of a left turn out of this compliance discussion and talk a little bit about self-directed IRAs. Obviously, I think that's what most people understand, that when they begin their kind of self-directed journey, that seems to be where they start. Maybe you can correct me on that. But it kind of seems that where people get the bulk of their education. But one thing that we commonly hear, either you can or you can't, or you should or you shouldn't. I mean, there's two camps here. I've not really heard the middle of the road camp, but it is on the self-directed checkbook control IRA. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of quickly break down what it is and how you see those structures being formed and kind of, I mean, can you just run us through that?
Yeah, we definitely can. I know we're on the clock.
So we are. Yeah.
Okay. Cause there's a lot going on here, but the long and short of it is, first let's describe what it is. And then we'll talk about answer questions. So as we mentioned, an IRA needs to have a financial institution custodian.
Yep.
Tends to be inconvenient, costly. You can lose deals, royal nuisance.
Sure.
A lot of paperwork. So wouldn't it be sweet if you can somehow get that money in a bank account, reduce your fees, reduce your paperwork, be able to move fast. Whether you're funding a deal, just write that check. You never lose the deal. You got funding deadlines. If you're a syndicator and you're raising money, who wants to deal with these custodians with their paperwork? And if you forget to dot one of those I's, you go right back to go and do not collect $200.
You're exactly right. And I've experienced innumerable delays on that front where you're trying to get money. An investor is trying to give you money, and you got this maddening merry-go-round of paperwork back and forth. And then 14, 21 days have passed, and you've exchanged 500 sheets of paper and still no money.
Exactly. So it would be sweet to get the investor the money in the bank account. So that is doable and is done. Now, there are a couple of different ways that it's done. And again, we're not going to get into the nuance of each of them. I would just caution people. Do not blindly go out on the internet and buy this or buy that, because there are just too many gotchas and you need a guide. So it's by setting up some sort of entity, LLC, corporation, a trust, and telling the custodian, hey, we're making a private equity investment. Just like if your IRA would go invest in a company, a startup company, your custodian would send the money to that company's bank account, and then that company management, they would use that money as they see fit.
Sure.
Well, how about if we create a company and we say, hey, you are the management of that company. And now the custodian sends all their money to that company. And now you just do your deals. You want to invest with Sam? You write Sam a check, right? And you have that entity doing the investing. That is the heart and soul of checkbook control. Now, sounds sweet. You get the money. You get the control. Now, there are naysayers. And getting to the bottom of this is not easy, because it's going to come back to the conflicts of interest again. It comes back to the incentives. So an IRA has got to have a custodian. So the concept here is that we're saying is that this company is not a disqualified person to the IRA, and the IRA can invest in it. There is pretty substantial precedent, in a sense, to that, both on the court level and at the IRS communication, that this structure does not a prohibited transaction. It's not bulletproof. It doesn't mean the IRS can't turn around tomorrow and say, hey, we want to attack this thing. They can't. But it is very, very become broadly accepted within the industry. And that's kind of the nature of the beast within the tax space. But it is, you cannot say that that risk is down to zero. Now, so there's a lot of, there's a strong logic behind it. There are court cases behind it. There's IRS literature behind it. It does not mean the IRS can't turn around and say, all right, we need some money. Let's pick on these guys.
Right.
Now, there are those that will say, don't do it, either because they'll say that the structure is not sound. They're going to say that maybe there's a risk that you're providing services to your IRA. Now, that's ironically not what you're going to hear from the custodians. Once you strip away what the custodians that try to fight this tooth and nail, what they tend to say is that you're going to do a prohibited transaction. We just can't trust you. You're going to do a prohibited transaction. You're going to write yourself a check. You're going to fund a deal with your son, your mother, something. You're going to go pay for your vacation with it. We can't trust you. That's really what they're saying. The custodians that are against this do not even tend to attack it on a more substantive way. Because I've communicated with all of them. And they really say is, hey, we can't trust these guys. Now, is that so? Well, some people can't be trusted.
Sure.
Now, if you think that you can't be trusted, then absolutely you should not have checkbook control. Now, the other thing is, the irony is, I have witnessed, maybe I shouldn't say this on the air, plenty of prohibited transactions funded by custodians. I've even had custodians tell people, hey, do this, and it's a prohibited transaction.
Right, right.
And that sort of comes back to where I think the custodians are best, really, if they just played the role the custodians are supposed to play and not say too much. Now, let's talk about the incentives here. Where is the real money in the IRA business? What would you say?
In collecting management fees year over year and in transaction fees.
Not even close.
Not even close. Man, all right, I'm out. Where's the real money?
The real money is holding your money. That's what the real money is, right? We're sitting, people, these guys listen to a podcast, invest in real estate. All right, I have $1 million in my IRA. Move it over. Okay, now I got to find deals. I don't have a deal yet. Okay, now we're sitting on billions and billion dollars. That is valuable.
But they are like a bank, but they can't lend that out. They're not using that. They're not collecting on the float. I mean, other than maybe a half a percent in a savings account somewhere.
So they absolutely are. Once you're in that size, once you're moving hundreds of billions of dollars,
right?
Firstly, every little bip is valuable once you get to that size. And the other thing is they get relationships that we don't get access to as retail, because they're moving this kind of money. In fact, some banks like to acquire IRA custodians because they get the money on their balance sheet, right? And now the bank all of a sudden can be lending based on that. So this is the real value. I have a friend who is a treasurer for an insurance company, right? At the end of each day, what he does is he kind of gets in touch with every single financial institution in the United States to see who's going to give him another sliver of a bip on the money overnight. Because once you get to that magnitude, the interest that this throws off is huge. So the real profit center is supposed to be on having your money. So the fees is really, there are different models, but the fees where the industry in a sense is, we'll see how things shake out, is like, the fees cover their costs.
Right.
Their personnel costs.
That's their operating expense budget. Right.
Exactly. And now the profit is holding your money. Now, of course, they're going to fight checkbook control.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Because there's no float. They're not collecting on, they're not making any juice on what they're holding.
Exactly. So who's to be believed? Again, it comes down to the incentives, and it's about people getting the full picture. So to be honest, most of our clients do have checkbook control, but we're not there to push the checkbook control. People work with us. We're going to tell them everything. People are too easy to go out of the internet, check a couple of sites, and essentially every site is telling you what they want you to hear because custodians are selling essentially their product, what they need is your money in their account. That's their product.
Got it. Bernard, I hate to do this, but we've even gone long already, man. And there's so much more I want to ask. I've got 10,000 more questions that are just running through my head, but we've got to jump into the final four here. If you were to distill everything you know about financial planning, kind of the financial industry as a whole, and you're giving this to, you're giving advice to someone's coming to you, what would be the first place or one piece of advice you would give somebody as they begin this journey?
You've got to own it. Everybody that's out there is giving you a slice of the truth. And as Tennyson said, a half-truth is the blackest of all lies.
I love that.
Because a lie that is outright may be, you can be fought, right? But the partial truth can't be. It's much harder. And so there's a lot of truth out there, but you've got to find your truth. And the only way to do that is, of course, you have to delegate. Of course, you have to work with service providers, but you have to own it. And delegate intelligently and strategically. There's no way you can delegate ownership. Ownership is not delegable.
Right, right. Understood. In your industry, things are constantly changing. Always. I mean, the tax code, the, you know, how people are investing. I can't imagine trying to stay on top of everything you're trying to stay on top of. So what's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
There's no substitute for going straight to the source. So I've got to read tax code, read regulations. I've got to go through financial products, spreadsheets. There's just no substitute for that. I will say there are helpful resources out there. There are leaders in every industry that you can kind of go through to kickstart your understanding or to fact check yourself, but there's no substitute for going straight to the source.
Got it. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm thankful for people like you in this world that are able to do that, because that sounds to say the least. So that's awesome. That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
One thing is kind of doing these kind of podcasts, which is sharing the knowledge. I put out an incredible amount of info out there. So even that people that do not work with Reshure, do not work with Bernard, there's better, honest, objective info. I'm very passionate about the financial space, to the extent that sometimes I will step on some people's toes because I'm going to say the truth as it is. And that's one way. Of course, I make connections for people within the industry, always happy to just share. You know, I've been blessed to be in a position where I can connect people, whether they're investors, whether they're people looking for jobs. Once you get out there, you put yourself out there, you get to network a lot, meet lots of people, make valuable connections.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Check us out, Reshure Financial. We've got a couple different websites. We've got 401kcheckbook.com. We've got agentfinancial.com. ReshureFinancial.com. But make it easy. You can Google Bernard Reese or Reshure Financial. You'll find lots of good stuff.
Awesome. Bernard, thank you so much. Certainly appreciate your time today.
Sam, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.